welcome back to the Survival and Basic Badass Podcast. Well, today we have Chris, the angry American from the Going Home series, or is it the Home series? How do you call it?
Penguin technically calls it the Survivalist series, a name which I didn't want it to have, but everybody else just refers to it as either the Home series or a Going Home series. So you kind of nailed both of them. So
all right, there you go. That's kind of the way I've always, you know.
Yeah, that's how I look at it too, you know.
I would say, you know, I was an early adapter with checking them out. I mean, I think at least by the second book, I was, you know, I had discovered, you know, by the second release there and been following it. And as they come out now, I don't think I've caught everyone along the way.
Yeah.
But a bunch of them. Now, like first let's touch on the books and then I think we'll kind of jump all over here and we got a lot going on in the world. We'll figure it all out.
There's not much happening, but we'll find some things to talk about.
Right. It's got to be something, right? So what's the premise of the whole book series? Like what is the whole for the listener? I mean, so, I know, but
so when I wrote Going Home actually on one of the survivalist forums online. I worked on the road at the time, so I spent a lot of time in hotels and I didn't like to hang out at bars or nothing. So I would sit in a hotel and I just started writing this story just for my own entertainment. And when I started that, it would have been 2010, I guess it was. And, the only things out there really was Patriots and One Second After. You had to go way back to like the '70s and William, John Stone and that kind of stuff to get, you know, books of the genre.
Right.
And so I decided I would make mine on the MP2 just because I wanted to make the world as bad as I could, as quickly and easily as I could.
Yeah.
And so the main character is a guy named Morgan Carter, and he's 250 miles from home in the state of Florida. And when the EMP occurs, and the entire first book is just him trying to get home. Mm-hmm. And that's all I was intending to write, was that story of this guy just trying to make his way home. And he's a prepper. I'm not gonna say mild prepper. He's a prepper. He had a ruck in his truck and he had a pistol with him. And so he had some stuff, but like a lot of folks, he had stuff he didn't need. He needed things he didn't have. And he has to deal with all that.
Right.
And that was just, my intention was to write that story, but it took on a life of its own online. It had over 2 million views online and people demanding that I publish it.
Right.
And so I was like, well, look, I'm not going to publish it, but I'll write you guys another one. So then I wrote the sequel, Surviving Home, on the forum.
Okay.
And that just kind of picked up. But, you know, because the getting home was – that's just the smallest part of the story. It was this guy's, you know, trip home, walk at 250 miles.
Right.
And then there's what happens after that. You know, he has a wife and kids and you know, he lives in a community. And how does – what does that look like after that – you know, after something like that occurs. And so I kind of just extrapolated that out. And we're still running with it. Actually, I had no intention of it being a series or running like it is, but the people that read this, there are so many people that are so invested in it. Like, there was a spell 4 years where I didn't get a book out because a whole bunch of stuff was going on in my life. Like my dad passed away and my mom had been very ill and was in and out of the hospital and it was just a bad time. So life occurred. But during that 4 years, I would get so many messages like, man, when's the next book coming? I'm worried about my friends. Like, that's what people would say. Awesome. And I get a lot of messages like that. And people will ask me, and I get asked a lot, you know, how many books are there going to be? How many books are there going to be? And my standard reply was always, I will write them as long as I enjoy writing them and you guys enjoy reading them. When one of those two things fail, we're going to stop. But I've decided here lately, I think I'm going to stop it at 20 books. So number 12 just published.
Still. All right.
Yes. Yeah. So there's still 8 more books to do. What the heck? Hang on. Sorry.
Oh, no worries.
Felt like something was stabbing me in the head. I've still got 8 more books to do. I'm working on 13 as well as some other works. I've got multiple books in the works right now. Actually 4. Present. Sorry about that. Where is
you're
that?
Good.
I didn't know that thing was on.
You're all good.
Yes. That's Mom. Let me just shoot Mom a text. You gotta answer Mom when she's looking for you.
That's the go-to. That's why the big alarm because you know it's urgent and important.
Yeah. All right. There we go. Okay. So yeah, that was the whole premise of it, and you know, I've been in the survival space. I mean, for at that point, a couple of decades. You know, I started in my teenage years with primitive skills. You know, breaking rocks together and doing all those things.
Yep.
And that just kind of slowly progressed into what I like to refer to as modern survival, trying to use the tools that we have and but learning the skills, because you know, sometimes we don't have tools, no matter how well we plan and prepare,
right.
We might find ourselves without them. So the knowledge is a big thing. And I'm always stressing to people to go out and get training. I don't care who you get training from, as long as they know what the hell they're doing, but go take a training. So I don't care if it's a survival class, a first aid class, a firearms class, or whatever class, go take some training, get some expert instruction. So I'm a big proponent of that.
Yeah. You always feel so much more like fulfilled when you do training. Like, I mean, I find it like so energizing, you know, or whatever. I'll go out. I went to, I work with some guys, actually some of the guys, with that movie that just came out, that, Sound of Freedom. And I was working with some of those guys. Oh man, it must've been about 9 or 10 years ago. And, and they were like, oh yeah, we do this training. And, you know, before we want you to go do anything, you got to come, you know, hang out. And we do a big training thing for a week and whatever. And I went down to Texas and just being around other guys who are all, you know, the same thing and, you know, have that same mindset and, you know, out there, it definitely builds you up. It's a disturbing world we live in.
I don't know if you recognize that goon. That's my brother, Alan Kay, right there.
Nice.
And when you talk survival, that's your
he's the go-to.
Right. Oh my god, yeah, you could drop him naked into anything and he's going to come out the other side in a suit and have all kinds of stuff. So I don't know what the suit will be made of, but he'll have one
Nice.
but yeah, it's he's an instructor too. He and I became very good friends through the same thing. We met through this whole survival skill thing. I don't like to use the term prepper per se, especially because it's been turned into such a negative thing these days. I prefer the term survivalist myself, because a prepper means you're getting ready. Yes, you're getting ready. Survivalist, that means you intend to survive it. I tend to live through it, you know.
I like it.
I stick with the old terms, you know, from the 90s, back in the days when survivalist was a bad thing. But I was neck deep in it then too, so.
Yeah, I was a late adapter, I think. Not that late. I did the Boy Scouts thing and all that, and was big into that. You know, so you learn the basics of life kind of thing, I think, that, you know, every young adult should learn. And then join the Navy, whatever. And actually, I was in when we were over bombing Kosovo and former Yugoslavia there doing that.
Yeah, and Balkans,
yeah. Yeah, watching all that. Watching everybody's world change kind of really changed my view, and how defenseless the people were kind of against really their government, and seeing how that can happen. And I know we've all been insulated in America with, you know, oh, well, nothing bad's ever happened in anybody's memory that, you know, they recall here anymore. And, you know, people don't have that mindset, and, you know, obviously things can change on a dime. So it's definitely somewhere
just ask
along
Israel.
The way.
Just ask Israel how fast things can change.
Yeah. Know? Well, they always seem to be seeing it. So,
well, and talking about, again, defenseless, you know, Israelis, most of them don't have weapons. You know, the kibbutzes had small security detachments that were armed, but that was it. And, and we saw what happened. And when people said, but this is America, nothing like that would ever happen here. Right. Well, I don't know. We've had a few million invaders here over the recent years.
We have.
That are currently in this country that do not have our best interests at heart. So it could happen. We could very well wake up one morning to mass chaos around this country. And it doesn't take that many. Now, again, remember, there are millions of them. But imagine 10 to 20 actors that all go, you know, kinetic on the same day in a coordinated manner around this country. And we have 10 to 20 simultaneous events occurring in this country. And what it would do to it, even if the casualty counts aren't that high, just the fact that many things occurred, you know, spread across the country like that, it would paralyze this nation. It would bring us to our knees, and which of course would lead immediately to martial law. And then we don't know exactly what that would look like, but yes, it absolutely can happen. So yes, you need to be thinking along those lines every day, in my opinion.
No, I think you're right on. It's funny. I was watching a video last night on the whole Stuxnet virus that, you know,
that was the one
I guess that took out Iran there, that, you know,
took out their centrifuges.
Yeah. Yep. Right. And, you know, and they were like, oh yeah, it's Siemens PLC stuff that it really focused on and disrupted with them. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I mean, I work with that every day. I mean, most of the stuff I do is Allen Bradley, but Siemens is everywhere and whatever. And it really, if you disrupted that, and you know, we gave it out to the world, you know, we had our best and brightest create it and said, yeah, here you go. And now anybody can, you know, with a little effort, go secure these things.
They're finding, and so you're an electrician, and that's my background as well. Granted, I haven't pulled any wire in a very long time, but
that's a good thing.
It's a wonderful thing. I loved the job when I did it. I was really good at it too. I took my job serious. I was a professional. But they're finding backdoor Chinese code in variable frequency drives, you know, PLCs. So for people that don't know, a variable frequency drive or a VFD controls motors, how fast they'll turn. Right. So pumping water, creating electricity, doing things like that. And then PLCs, programmable logic controllers, are what control the frequency drives. And they're finding Chinese code in these things. All of it has backdoors, and none of it is hardened not to any degree whatsoever.
Right. Yeah. So, well, that security is so lax. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go on.
No, I'm just saying your security is lax, and we are the biggest sitting duck on the planet because so many people hate us, and especially presently, you know, the operation over there in the Gulf just fell apart, where we, you know, we put together a coalition, what they call Operation Guardian or something. I can't remember the name now, but it was to protect commercial shipping from the Houthis.
Right.
And all the nations told us to pound sand. They're like, we're not going to participate in this if you guys are running it, because this is a shit show. So what does that say? Think about that. The United States Navy, the rest of the modern navies of the world said, we're not working with these clowns anymore.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
We are a laughing stock on the world stage.
There was
a time where the U.S. Navy instilled fear in our adversaries, and they all trembled at the sight of a carrier battle group showing up.
All day.
Not anymore. Intimidate the Houthis, man. We can't even intimidate the Houthis. So,
And I think part of it is, it used to be like, I think even if you took our you know, amazing battle group with the amazing guys we had in the, we'll say the 90s, wherever, whenever people were, you know, whatever you think of as the height of American, you know, excellence, the whole playing field has changed so much that a battle group doesn't even matter so much anymore, because we can destroy a country so many other ways, so much easier with a laptop, with, you know, even EMPs. It's still, all these things are now on the table that we really can't defend against.
And we're currently watching the second army of the world, Russia, be brought to their knees by Mavic drones. Like, I mean,
that's what they said. They were, I was watching this stuff, and they were like, they try and move artillery into position, and then the drones figure out where they are, and it's completely useless. And
they're taking a Mavic drone and strapping an RPG-7 to the bottom of it and flying it into a T-90 tank and destroying it.
Yep.
You know, it's costing them $500 to take out a $4 million
and it's like nothing. And that has to be. But that, what scares me is, I don't think it is a wake up call to the mainstream of the military, like the upper echelon. You know, obviously, I'm sure there's a lot of generals and guys that are really worried about it. But I really feel like the powers that be kind of have no idea what's going on. And go ahead. You're dying to say something.
I disagree with you. I think they know exactly what's going on, and I think that they are intentionally gutting our military.
Okay, then I can accept that. I can accept that. That was actually one of the points I was going to make. You know, you mentioned that there's so many bad actors out there right now that hate us, but I think we're also at the height of our country hating ourselves. Oh, like internally, we have so many people that, you know, exactly what you say, you're saying, where we're intentionally allowing, you know, our country to fall apart, our country to be taken advantage of.
But it's worse than we're intentionally allowing it. Our administration is actively engaged in making it happen.
Yes.
So you go south of the border, there are maps that get handed out to all of them, telling them each stop what services
we're running commercials.
And there are there's apps now that they can get, and they show up here, they cross the fence, they get a cell phone, they get a debit card, you know, prepaid card with cash on it, and a plane ticket, bus ride to where the hell ever. And they're taking these people and sending them to places that are predominantly conservative to water down the voting base. And then they're trying to allow these people to vote as well. You know, California's letting them. Which is the height of absurdity, and many Democrats have said it publicly. That, you know, new voter base. That's what we're doing. So they're not even lying to us about it. They're not trying to hide it. They're just telling us, we got to replace you people and get people that will do the things we want done.
Right. That will just do what they're told. Right.
Yeah.
You could talk about, you know, going on to destroying our country with our agriculture laws, the way we're changing things there, that whole thing with trying to kill the small farmer kind of thing, business thing there, making everybody kind of dependent on the whole. I mean, hell, it goes back to, you know, ethanol, and I'm sure before that, but with the subsidizing the corn and just the way we do things is just so ass backwards.
And you look at Europe because we're probably a decade roughly ish behind like where Europe's at. And so you look at like Denmark over there where they're shutting farms down. They're just coming in and telling them, you're done. You're not farming no more. You are done. We've got to reduce the CO2. And so, you know, our global overlord, Klaus Schwab, you know, self-appointed global overlord.
There you go.
He's declared his war on meat. He wants to end the production, mass production of meat for the peasants, you know, for the
peons. Exactly.
And the private ownership of cars. He announced here a couple of weeks ago that he has moved down his timetable for the outlaw of the ownership of private ownership of vehicles to like 2030 or 2035. I can't remember which one it was, but it was in the 30s there. He says that the world will be free of privately owned vehicles. It'll be mass transportation. Of course, he'll still have his private jets and limousines and all those things. But the rest of us, I guess, we're supposed to be walking or riding the bus, you know.
The 15-minute cities, right? That's the new thing.
Yeah. The line, that thing they're building in Saudi Arabia, the line, that
crazy
city there.
I shared that. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. It's anybody who denies that there is an organized and planned operation underway is walking around with their eyes closed.
I don't know how people don't see it. Yeah. And it's, you know, you and me are the conspiracy nuts, but I mean, that's how we're viewed by the world, I think. And it's just, you know, and people like us, it's just, it's crazy. Cause it's like, how do you not see it? Like, look at what's going on. You know, that was, I started doing rabbits for meat, and I'm like, I'm not going to be eating bugs. You know what I'm saying? My plan. You know, I'm like, I need a sustainable meat source, and I'm not really ready to take on cows and everything. I got about 35 chickens and a ton of rabbits, but and big gardens. But it really is that fear of, you know, you see crazy places like California and stuff, and I hate to say it, you know, being from New York. I know that, you know, California starts it, New York follows soon after, and then it spreads throughout the country, and it happens over and over again.
Yep.
And I don't know how everyone doesn't kind of wake up to that. That agenda just keeps getting pushed further and further, and you need to start figuring out how to take care of your family. And that's why I do this, is people need to figure out how to take care of their family. And the more you don't need anything from outside your house, your property, whatever, the better off you're going to be.
Absolutely. You know, and food, you know, food production in particular is one of the biggest things to tackle, because you've got to eat every day, you know. Yeah. So food and water, you know, water being even more important than food in most cases, but you know, you've got to eat food every day. And as we know, you know, food has been used as a weapon for time immemorial, you know.
Yeah.
Kill that. You know, you look at Ukraine, what Stalin did there. We can look into Africa and all the different famines that they've had. Look at Venezuela right now. You know, you don't have to look far. China, you don't have to look
China
far
every day. Yeah,
not where exactly. Food is used as a weapon. You know, I mean, there was a time in China where the citizens were not allowed to consume meat. Now, this was, you know, back in history, long ago, hundreds mm-hmm. and hundreds of years. But the reason the Chinese did that was to ensure that the population was too weak to resist.
Yeah.
Because protein is what builds muscle. Protein is what, you know, makes you stronger.
And keeps you mentally strong, right?
I mean, that's your brain as well, too. Right. And so you deny that to your population, you know, and it keeps them weaker, inherently weaker. So let's think about why are they wanting us to not have meat? Why are they not wanting us to do this? But now they say they want us to eat the bugs, but humans aren't designed to live on a diet of insects. We're not.
Right.
There's stuff there we can't can't digest and things like that. So we're not designed to live on that diet, but that's what they want us to do. And they're already surreptitiously putting it into products. So if you start reading the ingredients and things, some of those long names that are in there, Google them. When you're in the grocery store, look them up. You're going to find out there's cricket meal in a lot of stuff.
Right.
It's showing up already. So yeah. They're slow rolling it like they always do, slow rolling it. So that one day they're going to come out and say, well, this is
already been doing
products
it
for years. If you eat this, you've been eating bugs. And if you eat that, you've been, see, it's no problem.
Nope, nope.
And people are conditioned to be like, oh, okay. You know, the psychology of humans is amazing to me, especially when it's mass psychology, which is what we're living under. You know, people suck. In my opinion, on the whole,
kind of what it comes down to. That's a thing. Yeah. You know,
dumb, stupid, dangerous animals. Humans, dumb, stupid, dangerous animals. So
that's fair. And we've let, you know, the education and everything where the kids have no idea what's going on and whatever. And you know, we live in a world where parents are seen as the enemy, considered dumb and naive. You know, they're not tolerant. They don't know. They're so, you know,
tolerant.
They don't understand how the world works yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, in schools, it's no longer education. It's indoctrination. Everywhere you look, that's what it is. And we've got this advance in AI, and there's an AI tool now that every AI uses. I just forgot the name of it. Give me a minute. I might think of it. But it looks for the racism that, you know, in everything. And in the mission statement for the company that created this tool for AI, they clearly state that they basically don't take into account anything that has to do with the oppressor, white people, says it, white. So nothing can be said as a pejorative or a racist statement towards white people in the world of AI. There was one I saw this morning on Twitter. Somebody asked an AI graphics generator to generate a picture showing socialism versus democracy. The picture that came up looked like something out of Soviet Russia or China, you know, green fields, leafy, everybody's happy, bright sunshine, capitalism. Much like our president enjoys his red backgrounds when he gives talks, red backgrounds look like kind of flames in the back, and then just throngs of people lined up, like either waiting to go to work or waiting to collect their
ready
whatever.
To go into the factory with big smokestacks coming out. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, democracy. It was socialism versus democracy, not capitalism.
Okay.
But democracy was this hellscape looking thing, and socialism was utopia by AI. So why did AI do that? Because humans program the AI and
AI
told
them,
this is what's good and this is what's bad.
AI is so biased. It's unbelievable to me. I mean, I was early into checking it all out and seeing, you know, I'm into that whole world of whatever. I don't know. You mentioned you did the industrial electrician.
Oh, yeah.
Where I work, I'm basically like a firefighter kind of thing where, you know, I just get calls and jump. So I might have a night where I sit at my desk for 4 or 5 hours, and I have nights where I don't see my desk, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, go handle all the crises right now, or, hey, everything's just working and nobody's calling. So I have a lot of time to check out YouTube or whatever, you know, that's where I dig up all the content for the podcast and whatever, and have time to put together graphics and, you know, Lord knows what. So I'm always like, oh, AI, all this, you know, check it out. And I'm aware of the dangers. And it's funny because I'm the exact opposite. Like, I'm nonstop with it at work. And then the minute I get out, I don't even carry a cell phone around with me. You know, I always get the, oh, we called you, or the wife, you know, I called you, I texted you. I'm like, I have no idea. Yep. If I carry an iPhone with me, it's so I can listen to music, you know, well, I'm out somewhere, you know, I might have headphones with whatever. But that's, I don't know. I get off track, but the, that's the world, you know? I mean, it's hard to get away from it all, but it so is shaping how we view things and how we see the world. And it is another thing conditioning us, you know, and the fact that it's, you know, showing us the same things. I mean, even, you know, I do tons of research on YouTube. Obviously, if you pull up my YouTube channel, even compared to yours or my wife's or anybody else, we see a totally different world because those algorithms have, you know, shaped what they're going to show us. Yep. And, you know, it does add to what you're looking for, you know, where if you're looking for things that makes you hate and angry, you're going to see things that make you hate and angry. And the same thing, if you're looking at puppy dogs in love, I think, you know, you're going to find puppy dogs in love, you know.
But they're also, you know, I've been watching YouTube for a very long time. And so, like, one of the things in particular that I tracked was the entire Ukraine deal back to 2008, from prior to the Maidan experience all the way through to present day. And a lot of those videos that I used to watch about what was going on over there are gone now.
Yeah.
YouTube scrubbed them. And they're scrubbing so much stuff.
Yes,
and
they really are.
Controlling the narrative of what you can see. So that, and when you throw AI into this, it's hard to determine. And it gets harder every day to determine what is reality. So did you hear about the explosion in that hotel in Houston, yesterday afternoon, I guess it was?
No, I don't watch news much.
Yeah, it was a big explosion, blew all the windows and everything out of this big hotel in Houston. On Twitter earlier, it was the ATF came out and said, oh, this was a gas leak explosion. And I'm like, well, all right, the ATF said that, but was it? You know, we live in a time right now where you have to question literally everything you hear. 100%. We know our government lies to us. You can watch the press secretary stand up there and lie to your face, just straight face. You know they're lying to you. So maybe it was a gas leak explosion that did that, or maybe it wasn't. But they're telling us that. So it's so the truth has now become nearly impossible to discover unless you're there to witness it with your own eyes, because you can't believe 100%. What you read. You can't believe video.
Yep.
And with AI, we can no longer believe what we see. So, exactly. And that's all part of this. It's the dumbing down of the populace they're controlling the information narrative. It's essentially a psyop. You'll hear what we want you to hear. You know, you'll own nothing. You'll eat the bugs. You'll be happy.
Yep.
And that's where they're trying to hurt us to. And I don't really know why. I don't get the why to it, unless it's just this, or who even. I'm not even sure who. I know the Klaus Schwabs of the world are involved in that, obviously, because he publicly states
I think it has to come down to they just want you to be, you know, servants. And by that, I mean, you know, we want you to make the food. We want you to make our nice things. And, you know, however you do that, you can have your little life and pretend you're happy in your own thing, but you're still creating what we want, but we don't want you any kind of beyond that, any kind of rising up intelligence. I think that's what it comes down to.
Not only that, but you're going to make for us the things we want, but we're not going to allow you to own those things. You're not going to be allowed to possess those things. And we're going to tell you what you can and cannot have, what you can and cannot eat, where you can and cannot live. They're trying to close down public land in this country to human access, to shut it down so we cannot even walk in there. Like, that's absurd, you know? And again, that's to force people into concentrations, which violates one of the fundamental laws of nature, carrying capacity, you know?
Yeah.
Any patch of dirt from 1 square foot to 1,000 square miles of dirt can only support X numbers of any given life form. So
right.
we violate the hell out of that rule all the time. And as long as this very intricate and fragile system that we've developed exists, we can live there. But as soon as it falls apart, we can't. So we've got, we're re-engineering human beings to the point that we can no longer exist in our natural environment, which is the forest, temporal forest. That's where we're designed to live. That's, mm-hmm. you know, all the evolution, everything designed us to survive and thrive there. And now if you take the average human and drop them into that environment unsupported, they're going to die in a matter of days, usually.
Yeah.
Because they can no longer exist in their own natural environment. They can only exist in this purely artificial environment that we've created. And I say artificial because we have to make it all. None of it occurs naturally. We have to produce it. So therefore, yeah. it is an artificial environment.
Right. Now it's crazy. You know, even going back, you were mentioning all the things I know on YouTube. I was talking to some buddies at work like 3 or 4 years ago, and they never heard of that idea of when Rumsfeld came out and said that, you know, oh, we lost all that money when he gave that speech. It was billions or a trillion.
Oh, it was $1 trillion.
September 11th. And that's gone. Yeah. You can't find that on YouTube. And it's funny, about 3 years ago, I looked for it and I finally found, like, somebody had a video about a bunch of things and it was like in there, and even that's gone. And I'm like, there's nothing. You can't prove anything anymore. It's crazy.
Yeah. Did you ever see the graphic of what a physical stack of $1 trillion looks like? I forget the number of pallets it was, but it is enormous. Mm-hmm. It's bigger than a house. So imagine that much cash physically moved into Afghanistan, and the Taliban is still finding it. I just saw a video a little while ago where they found a brand new US $100 bills, all wrapped in plastic. And it was tens of millions of dollars that they found in a stash someplace. And it lined this room. They're just panning this room, and it's just, you know, millions of dollars that we left there with the billions of other, you know,
why not, right?
Equipment and everything. Yeah. I mean, what's a little cash when we left all this hardware and ammo for these guys to, they're not going to use it on us. So, you know,
yeah. And that's even, you know, I mean, it goes back to the whole, you know, Iran, when we hated Iraq and we were buddies with Iran, or way back. It's just, it's crazy. Like, over and over again, we're funding whoever, dropping guns off wherever. You see the mm-hmm. movies and stuff, and it's just a crazy world. But history is changing all the time. I don't know. I grew up as a big Ayn Rand fan. I love Atlas Shrugged. Is that whole mindset. And it kind of disgusts me where, I don't know, there's a big thing like towards the end of the book, you know, they go to rescue the guy gets captured and mm-hmm. and she goes to rescue her boyfriend there. Well, I guess John Galt they're going to get, but she's with the Hank Reardon guy, whatever. Yep. Bottom line is, she goes in and they're trying to break in and their security guy, and she's like, make a decision, you know, decide you believe me or don't. Yep. And that's kind of like the key to like everything in my mind is, if you can't, you know, her big thing was, if you don't make decisions, you don't have value. And the more thought you have, the more value you have, kind of thing. It's just that, and that free will going away. And I think, you know, I always talk to the wife, I'm like, that's why I think you get your mass murder kind of thing in the schools or whatever, is people don't value human life, right? I mean, we could talk about religion being the cause of that, whatever. They don't see value. And I think a big part of that is, you're all part of the collective. What you do as an individual is less important than mm-hmm. what the group decides and what we want. You know, if the group decides we're going to do this about the planet, if you're the outsider, you're the problem. You know, you need to go away. And people see themselves as the problem. And I hate to say it. I mean, that's
they don't see themselves as the problem. They see others as the problem. And you're right. And it's not even – when you say the group, it's not even the majority.
No,
it's
no, not I don't even think
the majority. It's always the minority. So I don't know if you remember, just recently it made the media. It was talked about a lot. There's a guy being sentenced, and he jumped over the judge's whatever the hell the judge sits behind. I don't go to court much, and attacked the judge. Okay. And so he was brought back into court, and the next time he's brought back in, he's wearing a muzzle and a mask. He's got shackles and handcuffs, waist chain, all chained together, and his hands are in some kind of thing too, so he can't even use his hands.
Okay.
And just on Twitter, for example, all of the comments are about how disturbing it is to see a black man in chains. I don't care what he did. That's disturbing and that's wrong.
Right.
And what we're doing and what they've very successfully done is removing the consequences of people's actions from them. You know, you look at the smash and grabs or the mass lootings that happen where people run into a Macy's or a whatever or a Coach store and grab everything and run out the door because there's no consequences to them. They know it. They know if they get caught, there's no bail anymore. They're going to arrest me. They're going to let me go. Good luck catching me next time. I'm off to the races again. So they're removing the consequences of people's actions. You're not allowed to defend your own property the way you should be able to, or in a lot of cases, even your life. There's a guy 2 months ago in New York City shot a guy raping a woman on a subway platform with people standing around. And he shot him to stop him. He's catching 4 felonies and he's in jail.
Right.
You know, it's absurd. They're incentivizing the criminal and de-incentivizing the victims. So
all day.
Yes.
They get bolder and
it's all part of it. It's they've got a solution. We don't know exactly what it looks like, but they've got a plan they want to implement. They just have to get enough of the people begging for that solution. And they're going to go, oh, well, you guys wanted it. So we have this. And everybody's going to be like, yeah, give us that. Not understanding what they're doing by surrendering liberty. And most people don't understand what liberty really is. But it's sad. Watching people surrender their freedoms, surrender their rights, surrender their personal sovereignty is really what they're doing.
Yeah. No, I think like when I used to look at it 5-6 years ago, I used to look at it with, you know, Germany was running crazy with everything and, you know, and you had, Night of Broken Glass, the whole thing. So, but, and they had, you know, they had the whole transgender thing. They had gay stuff going on and there was just craziness and people were running wild and whatever. And everybody was getting so where Hitler said, look, I'm going to come in and bring back normal. You know, I'm going to be the strong arm. And they were begging for, you know, a strong arm to come and bring normalcy back. And I kind of was worried when, you know, Trump came out because that's kind of what everybody was grabbing for.
Yeah.
And he's like, look, I'm just going to bring normal back and I'll do things beyond what you would have considered okay for a government because I'm going to give you back what you want. But I hate to say it, the more I see stuff unfold now, I think it's way more sinister than that. I think it's going to be very different than us just begging for a strong arm. I think they have a bigger plan, and I'm not even sure where it goes. But it could be that we're just begging for a strong, you know, authority.
Well, go back to 9/11. All right, 9/11. What did we get? Patriot Act. You know, and they've done nothing but reinforce that thing and reinforce that thing over the years. No one's ever talked.
And both sides keep saying how bad it is when they're not. Yeah.
Yep.
When they're not doing it.
We created the DHS and you know, and how many additional agencies underneath them now.
Right.
You know, that's the Stasi. They're the state police, DHS. Right. That's state police. You know, it's 10th Amendment. You can just wad that up and throw it away. It doesn't really exist no more. States' rights and all the things.
Right.
You know, anything not specifically enumerated, you know, in this document remains the states retain. So that's out the window. And they did that through money. So they basically started bribing the states and then told them, oh, well, if you want to keep getting our money, you got to go by our rules, not your rules. So, and, you know, money is that's the ultimate, you know, get for just about anybody. You know, you throw enough money at them, they'll do whatever you want them to do. So that's what they do to states and at times individuals. You look at the COVID payments and all that stuff that went down. It's, you know, it's just I never got any of them. I never got COVID payments, but that was just me.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. And more though, it just builds up and we let it get worse and worse and we give up control and they take more and more and it's, I don't know, it wears you down. Now tell me, so the new book, right? You got the book out at number 12 we're at, right? 12?
Yep. Number 12. It's the new one. Exploring Home.
Now,
yep.
Now, so where are we at? Where are we going? Or even if you want to kind of,
So, you know, we're 12 books in, and essentially on timeline wise, in that world, we're only about a year in. Year long is all it is. But we're at the phase now where, we're slowly beginning the rebuilding phase. We're going to start putting this country back together. And as the series moves on, some of the things that we're going to see is, the Constitution is going to come into play in a couple of the books in a big way, in that it's being rewritten. Uh-huh. Now, that's not in the next book or nothing. I don't want anybody to think that, but we're going to see a return to sanity what we're going to see. The Constitution is going to get amended to codify the language to be unambiguous, that nobody can argue against it. The Second Amendment is going to be rewritten. The First Amendment, all of it's going to be rewritten so as to be crystal clear, crystal clear. The Tenth Amendment will be a big focus of what happens in rebuilding this nation. Our federal government is going to be dramatically reduced and back to what its original intent was meant to be. You know, in the world that will be created in the series, the term career politician will be as offensive as the term pedophile was and still should be. So it's not going to be looked at as a career path anymore. It's going to be looked at as a hardship that people endure on behalf of their country. You don't get rich. Now, lots of things. Like when this gets done, lobbyists will no longer exist. You also, if you are elected to office in the country, you will not be able to go to work for any firm that does business with the federal government ever if you run for office and are elected. Because those are inherent conflicts of interest that any moron can understand. You know, you look at – I didn't see Sotomayor's Supreme Court justice. I didn't see her current net worth. But when she was elected to the Supreme Court, she had a net worth of $750,000.
Okay.
And now she's worth millions. I know it's in millions. I just didn't see the exact figure. Because they're contrasting that against Clarence Thomas, who does not have a lot of money, is not a rich man. And you know, basically talking down on Clarence Thomas for not being able to manage his money and talking up Sotomayor for knowing how to work the system and enrich yourself inside of it.
Right.
And we can talk about the Pelosi family and down the entire list of all of them, you know, the California crime syndicate of the Pelosi's.
Right.
But that kind of thing is what's going to be looked back at, and the people that are going to be running the country as we come out of the other side of this are literally going to say, never again. Never again will this happen. The judicial codes are going to be realigned. The IRS will go away. Colonial title will return to the people of this country. So that's the big picture stuff. There's a lot of how we get there is the fun part, but in my imagined world, I'm trying to reset the board to what things should be and we're meant to be.
Right. So. No, I like it. And I like, you know, that's the thing. I think nobody tackles and nobody has time to tackle. I mean, it took you 12 books and we're still not even there. But that's always what people are wondering about is how do you rebuild? How do you recover from that? I think maybe Patriots touched on it at the end, something where they had some kind of like thing going on there. But exactly. That's definitely awesome. You know, that we see something, you know, some kind of, how do we recover? Cause that's what I'm afraid of. You know, you get all these like crazy militant types who are like, yeah, we overthrow the government. Well, what do you think you're going to get? You know, who's going to step in and how do you get there? You know, that's the whole.
Yeah. Power abhors a vacuum.
Yeah.
Anytime there's a vacuum, power, somebody, some form of power will fill that void. So
and
yeah, it's gotta be done right.
And
we run a risk.
Yeah.
We right now, our country, we run a massive risk. So the pendulum is swinging left extremely and still moving. But I think it's starting to peter out its progress to the left, and it's going to start swinging the other way.
Wow. I'd like that.
The, the extreme far right is just as bad. We right. don't want that either. So we've got to hope that we can slow the momentum on this swing to something closer resembling sanity. Right. You know, a lot of people want revenge on the left for all of the things they forced upon us. You know, mm-hmm. you know, we've got a fraction of a percent of the population that is essentially dictating how the rest of this country will
right.
live.
Right, right.
And people are getting fed up. They're not fed up enough yet, you know, but eventually enough of them will get fed up with it. And we're going to start that swing the other direction. Mm-hmm. And we got to be careful and temper ourselves. And I know everybody wants revenge and, you know, we got to do, and there will be a lot of it. You know, vengeance will be served to a lot of folks, you know, unfortunately, because we've gotten into an era now where you can no longer have civil discourse.
Right.
It's not at all. You're with us or against us. That's it. You're part of our solution or part of our problem. And there's no middle ground. And we've got to have middle ground. You know, I've got to be able to agree with some of what you say, disagree with some of what you say, but also agree with some of what you say and disagree with some of it. And we can still live together.
Right.
That's the beauty of 50 states in this country. The yeah. states were designed to be able to pass their own laws.
I mean, that's the beauty of being a human. And it's so yeah. disgusting to me. I don't have to feel the same way about guns as you do or the yeah. same way about, you know, whatever. But you can do your thing and I can do my thing. You can be a vegetarian. You can live whatever lifestyle. I could care. You know, that's great. You do you. Just don't yeah. tell me. You know, that's let exactly. me do mine. And, you know, I understand, you know, people are like, well, if you have guns, you could hurt me. Well, yeah, let's make killing or hurting people illegal. We'll make those crimes. I can get behind that, you know, unless it's justified.
You don't even need a law for that. We forget that we are nothing more than another mammal that lives on this planet. We are another animal that lives on this planet. Big, dumb, dangerous ones, like I said earlier, but that's all we are. The laws of nature still apply. In nature, if you're attacked, you have to defend yourself. Because okay. what is the cost here? Your life. That's right. the cost. Okay. If you aren't living your life properly as far as knowing your food sources and where they are, how to find them, how to avoid the predators, where to build, you know, build your den, how to live, where to find water, where to source the things you need to exist, you die. Simple. The same thing happens to people, and people have an inherent, every animal not even has the right, has the instinct to self-defense.
Right.
Humans want to legislate that with words out of existence and say, no, you can't defend right. yourself or your property. You know, if a dog's got a bone, that's his property. Go take it from him. If he's a domesticated dog, you're going to be able to get away with it. If it's a wild animal,
probably not.
You're not going to get away yeah. with that. right. You know? Right. So we've been overly domesticated. And like I was talking about earlier, we're de-evolving too into that. We can no Definitely. Longer exist in our natural environment.
100%.
So self-defense is not a right. That's a natural law. That's just a fact. It exists. Right. It is. And there's no denying
the Declaration of Independence. Yep.
Yes. So, and I think a lot of people forget that. They forget, since we live in this artificial world, that the natural world still exists. And those laws are absolute. There is no gray area, middle ground, or room for discussion in the laws of nature because they are absolute.
Yeah.
And if more people would wake up and realize that and remember that, we would probably be better off.
Yeah. No, that sounds right. I don't know. So, all right. So everybody's going to run out, buy your book because well, they're going to download all of them on Audible or
awesome.
Wherever it
Audible.
Is, right? Audible.
Yeah.
Now, how does that return for you? If somebody buys all your books on Amazon, do you do better than you probably do, right? Than if they went to Audible and did that actually, and got all 12? I have no idea.
It's a little convoluted. So when I finally eventually literally caved into the pressure and self-published going home, the first editions are so bad. The editing was awful. they're terrible. But they're in hardback and they're still out there.
Okay.
I actually had a
those are the rare collector's items that people sell those for $2,000 and $5,000.
No, I don't have any of them. I wish I did. I used to have cases of those things. Gee, if I'd had any idea, because I had a guy buy one out of Italy. He paid $4,000 for it.
Wow, it's crazy, huh?
Shipped it to me to sign, which I did. Nice. And I shipped.
And you wanted to keep it because you're like, hey, well, I needed this.
I have two of them.
Okay.
I still have two. I have one original, and then I have one that has an unreleased cover on it that no one ever saw. So I do have those two. But after self-publishing and releasing it, about 6 weeks later, Penguin Books called and made an offer on the book, which I turned down, much all to their dismay. But a couple weeks later, they called back. They had found Religion or something and made an offer that I couldn't say no to, and I took it.
All right.
So the first five books are with Penguin Books and all formats. And to people out there that a lot of people want to be writers. And like I said, when I first got into this, I had no intention of being a writer. That wasn't what I was looking to do. I was just killing time and having fun.
Right.
And everybody wants that traditional publisher to pick them up because they think that's the benchmark of success. And yeah, there's quite a bit of money involved in it at times. But I make way more per sale on the books that I self-published through Amazon per book than I do through Penguin. And then the self-published books, I had a deal with a publisher, an audiobook publisher, Podium Publishing, which is the premier audiobook publisher that there is. And they made me an extremely generous offer that I took. So they're my biggest revenue source actually is Podium Audio, not Penguin Books. They're trivial compared to what I make through audiobooks because so many people like them. And the reason is I ended up with a fantastic narrator who messes things up a lot. He says things wrong all the time. But the readers are so vested in him that they're
you
running
can't
jokes.
Change now, right?
They're running jokes
now. Your guys, right.
Yeah. And so, and people just love it. They love the audiobooks. And the guy does a super good job narrating them with inflection and changing. Like the listeners know which character is talking just by the voice.
Definitely. So, I mean, I'm a big audiobook fan. And
me too.
The narrator makes a huge, difference.
Well, and so that was like part of the deal was when I first self-published, I did a deal with Podium Publishing. They had the audio rights. When Penguin came along, they're like, we want the audio rights. You need to call Podium and get them to release it to us.
Right.
And this was a lot of money on the table at this time. And so I called Podium and explained it to them. And they're like, look, we do not want to do this. They said, but we understand what this means for you.
To you, right.
They're like, so we're going to do it. They didn't release it. They sold it to Penguin for $30,000, which I thought was great. I laughed my ass off. But the day that I terminated my relationship with Penguin. We were negotiating another contract. Things are great. But then the guy I was talking to used a turn of phrase that I really didn't appreciate. And as they say, negotiations broke down at that point.
Okay.
Which ended up with me telling them that I was going to take another path. And contractually, I was done with them. I was free to walk away.
Right.
And I did. But I also immediately sat down on the steps because I stand on the front steps of my front porch of my house. And I sat down. And I was like, oh, my God, what did I just do? There's a lot of zeros in these numbers.
I risked a big, payday, right.
I'm like, what did I just do? And about 2 hours later, Podium Publishing called me. And they're like, hey, man, we regret selling away the rights to your audiobooks. One of the biggest mistakes we ever made. They're like, if there's any way we can work together in the future, we'd love to. And I was like, funny, you should call today. Same day. So I know someone in Penguin dropped a dime to somebody. And they're like, we'll send you a contract right now. And I'm like, well, hold on. I said, we got to have the same narrator. I said, we can't change narrators in the middle of the series. And he goes, they're like, oh, that's not a problem. We'll get him. I'm like, man, I said, look, I said, having dealt with Penguin and stuff, I understand contracts a lot better than I used to. And I know that if it's not in black and white, it didn't happen.
Right.
They're like,
all day.
So they're like, well, we cannot negotiate a contract with him without a contract from you. So you have to sign this contract and we'll go get it. I said, all right. I said, do me this then. I said, put a 72-hour sunset clause in there that says that you have to acquire him within 72 hours. And if you do not, our contract is void. And they're like, yeah, no problem. I was like, wow, that was easy. So by the time I walked in and sat down at my desk, the email was there. I printed it, signed it, emailed it back to him. They called me at 10 a.m. the next day and said, he's in.
Nice.
I was like, wow. And so I got lucky. The whole process of me becoming published and all of it was like being struck by lightning. A lot of people ask me for advice. I'm like, don't look at me for advice.
Right. I'm a fluke.
What happened
to
me was, even Amazon, they called me one day and they're like, hey, we're with Amazon. We'd like to ask you some questions and stuff. And I was like, all right, go for it. So they start asking me questions about publishing and things like that. And when I got done, the girl was so funny. She goes, oh, She goes, "You're one of those." And I was like, what, you know? And she's like a unicorn. In publishing, we call you, people like you, a unicorn. She's like, "You've had tremendous success in traditional publishing, and you're also extremely successful in self-publishing." She said, "You're what every writer out there wants to be." And, right. And I was like, well, you know, I said, it's all happened despite my best efforts at preventing it from happening. Everything that's happened is, I just got lucky.
I love
but
it.
But I will admit, I don't consider myself a good writer, but I do consider myself a very good storyteller. I can spin a yarn.
Nice.
And just getting that on paper and making it look good. And that's the hard part. That's the, right. But I got some really good professionals now that work with me. I hired a very expensive firm now to do my editing. And if guys that are out there in the self-published space knew what I spent to produce a book, it would blow their minds.
To look pretty. Yeah. Nice.
Well, even if for the editing and for all the stuff that goes into it, I spend thousands to prepare a book for release. It's no small task or little process for me to put a book out. Cause I'm trying to give the absolute best product I can, you know?
Yeah. All right. Now I have to wrap up cause I have to, some of us have to go to work to pay the bills, but
I got more of these to do today. So yeah.
Right. Oh, fair enough. You have, you're looking at maybe a TV series.
Is there anything
we can help that go along or see what's going on with that? How do we track that?
Right now I've got a contract that's being hammered out. I've got to get this one little contract out of the way. And then we're kind of back to the races. The problem is to get this done, we have to deal with Hollywood. And when we look at what Hollywood's producing, they do not want to produce this project. And I've taken numerous meetings already.
It's kind of anti-Hollywood.
It's extremely anti-Hollywood. And I've walked out of numerous meetings. I've been in the studios and sat down with studio presidents, the whole thing, and looked at them and said no. And to see the look of shock on their faces when I say no to them. And they're like, what? I'm like, no, that's not what people want to see. Now, I said, nobody wants your interpretation of the books. They just want the books. You don't need to add all this woke diversity and all this stupid. I'm like, people are sick of seeing that. So finding the right people to do it is the hardest thing in the world. And it may come down to where I'm going to have to say to hell with it. I'm going to do it myself. And I don't mean me film it. I'm going to raise the money.
Whatever.
I will be the executive producer. I will be the guy standing there saying yes or no. And I'll sign the checks and I'll get it done.
And then sell it or don't, to whoever.
Well, or I'll build a platform and I'll charge a subscription and you can stream it and watch it there. And so
that works, right? You've done it before with your books. So
And it's fully produced. I have a screenplay. I have the budgets. Nice. I have what we call the lookbook, pitch deck. I even have a sizzle reel. Like, you know, we've got a complete package ready to go. Just got to find the right people. And so far I've been unsuccessful in that effort.
That's
the way it is. Because I'm not going to sell out.
I like that. That's what I like to hear. Now, so where do we go to check out everything you're doing? What's the website?
AngryAmerican.com. You can hit that up. You can sign up for a newsletter there. There's going to be stuff there that when not yet, but it's coming. What I'm doing is I'm putting together a small, I don't know if it's going to be like a pamphlet or a small book, but it's going to be a character guide. So it's going to have every single character that's ever been introduced into the story.
Nice.
You'll know what book, what chapter they showed up in, and get a little bit about them.
So
this could be a cool thing that's coming up in the website that when you sign up for the newsletter, you're going to get that for free. Nice. But you can sign up for the newsletter, follow us there. We do Facebook Lives once a month. We do.
So you have a podcast? Online. Is that right?
We have a podcast tomorrow, Wednesdays. Yep. There we go.
That's the
podcast. So Wednesdays, we record a podcast. You can watch it live on YouTube, Twitter, and I think even Facebook while we're doing it. And then it goes out as a podcast as well.
Nice.
And I'm on all the socials in every capacity, you know, and under the Angry American or Angry American, depending on.
Angry American. Got it. And then
we're currently arguing over the name. Somebody else uses this name too, but I started before them.
Oh, yeah.
I've trademarked it. Oh, yeah. Hmm. Yeah. I've trademarked it now. So. And I also have proof of first use. So this guy's going to have to.
I've always thought of you. So when I think Angry American, this is where I'm at.
Yeah.
So fair enough.
Yep.
Yeah. It's
so weird. You can buy the books on Amazon. Best place to get them, honestly. Right. You know, I may in the future move away from Amazon, but that'll be a discussion for a different time and a much bigger project. So, yeah.
All right. Well, I really
appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, man.
great. I love the chat, books, bro. Man. They're great. So with that, stay safe, and we'll talk to everybody next week.